There is no negotiation training in pre-licensing. This is one of the few careers that requires a tremendous amount of negotiation prowess and expertise that doesn't provide any to new agents.
Hello, welcome to episode 140 of the Smart Agents Podcast. As always, my name is Michael Walter and I'll be your host. In today's episode, we are joined by New York City-based agent Eric Davey Gislason. Over the course of his real estate career, Eric has held a variety of roles, but his passion truly lies with training fellow agents in the art of negotiation. As an instructor with the Real Estate Negotiation Institute and owner of Archway Partners, Inc., Eric helps agents better understand the tactics and psychology behind successful negotiation. Throughout our conversation, Eric shares his tips for communicating with clients to build trust and rapport, and even role-plays some of his most effective techniques for both guiding buyers and sellers through a changing market. Now, before we get on to today's featured interview, make sure to subscribe to the Smart Agents Podcast. You can find the show on all major podcasting platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and now Amazon Music. Also, if you or someone else on your team has an incredible story or tip to share with our community, send us a message at feedback@smartagents.com. We're always on the lookout for new stories to share. All right, let's get on to today's featured interview with Eric Davey Gislason. This conversation really could have lasted hours and only scratches the surface of the information that Eric has to share. So be sure to check out the episode description where I've included several links to the Real Estate Negotiation Institute, Archway Partners, Inc., and Eric's social profiles. All right. Well, really, the way I like to start everything out is if you could just introduce yourself to us a little bit, who you are and where you are.
Yeah, Michael, thank you so much. I'm glad to be here. And I'm located in Queens, New York City, so Jackson Heights, Queens. And my name is Eric Davey Gislason. I'm a real estate professional in New York City. I've worked with I'm licensed with Brown Harris Stevens. I also have a passion project, a side project that I do, which is instructing and coaching agents. Particularly, my instruction focuses around collaborative negotiation tactics for real estate professionals. So I teach two pretty robust courses nationally. One is called the Certified Negotiation Expert Designation Course. And then the second level, the advanced course, is called the Master Certified Negotiation Expert Designation Course. And they all focus around core concepts and advanced concepts of collaborative negotiation, understanding collaborative negotiation, buyer psychology, the different styles of negotiators, and all of that sort of thing. So I love teaching this. I love introducing this content to, you know, real estate professionals who have been in the business for 30 years, but maybe have intuitively been doing these things, but don't know how to explain it or convey it to a client. And then, you know, people right out of pre-licensing who want to leg up on some of their competition by really understanding the art of influence, persuasion, and negotiation.
So before we dive into the negotiating tactics and things like that, tell me a little bit about how you yourself got into real estate and what was it that really drove you to wanting to go that route?
Thanks. That's a long journey for me, and probably like many of your listeners, and maybe even for you, is a not a traditional one. And I think a lot of people in real estate come from so many different non-traditional backgrounds, this is a second career where they fell into it, found that they love it. And that's what happened with me. I moved to New York City from Minnesota. I grew up in a small town in Minnesota, went to college in Minnesota, and moved out to New York to be an actor, actually. So I did musical theater and worked as a performer for about 10 years, clearly unsuccessfully. I ended up in real estate, but had a wonderful journey, met my wife, did a lot of regional theater, national tours, and local theater, before realizing, I think I need to move into something that's going to become more of a long-term career for me. I had a couple of major knee injuries, that sort of thing. So I ended up stumbling into real estate with this understanding that I had limited options. I was now a decade out of college. I had, a lot of restaurant experience, bartending experience, and I felt like my options were go back to school, get a restaurant job and maybe manage a restaurant, or find some sort of other entrepreneurial mode or career that I could make a long-term career. And so I was temping, recovering from a knee surgery, temping, and met a guy who was also temping, but was a real estate professional with his family's firm. And he was the first person to really give me a good sense of what it was to be a real estate agent. What did the day-to-day look like? What are the ups and downs? What's the hustle? It's not, you know, get rich quick. And after actually hearing a measured and realistic idea of what real estate, a day in the life of a real estate agent was, I was like, you know, this is something I think I would really be good at and that I could succeed in doing, and signed up for my pre-licensing the next day. And here I am 16, 17 years later. I absolutely love it. It's been something that I didn't realize how much I was going to love real estate until I got into it. And my journey in real estate is also very interesting, because I spent about 5 years as an agent. Before then, I was with a smaller firm, and got an opportunity to move into management, and then grew as that firm grew into our director of sales, as well as our director of agent development. So I was training all of our agents in sales and rentals, had a really, really great kind of 10-year run with a company that really taught me how to be a real estate professional. And then it was time for me to move on. And my kids were getting a little bit older. The life as of a sales director is brutal. For those of your listeners who know, who are agent or who are managers or sales directors, it's a really, really difficult and time consuming position. And it doesn't seem like there's ever a day off. So as my kids were getting older, I said, you know what, I want to cut that off and have more time with my family, have more flexibility and freedom. So I went back into the field as an agent. Best decision I ever made. And that's how I got hooked up with the Real Estate Negotiation Institute and started my journey as a negotiation instructor as well.
Right. So, I mean, over the course of your career, you've seen all kind of ups and downs with markets, and then bringing agents in and kind of having to train them through those. So, you know, transitioning over into the coaching and doing these courses, it's kind of a natural progression for you.
Yeah, it really was. It's interesting you say that, because when I left management and went back into the field as an agent, I regained all those things that I missed about being an agent, being out with clients and seeing these beautiful apartments and really re-engaging with the landscape of New York City and the architecture and all those things that I loved about being an agent. But one of the things that I missed about being a manager and a director of sales and development was all of the coaching and training that I was able to do, and using all of my industry knowledge and experience to help other agents succeed and grow. So when I took the Certified Negotiation Expert course as an agent back in the field after leaving management, it was only a few weeks later that I contacted Tom Heyman, who's the founder and CEO of the Real Estate Negotiation Institute. And I said, Tom, I think that I'd be a great instructor for you. I have coaching in my background. I have instruction in my background, management experience, and I think this would be a good fit. And so I went through all the paces with the Real Estate Negotiation Institute, and that was about 7 years ago. So,
right. What was it that that you've seen and, you know, see now still while you're doing this, that is really where agents really need this type of training that maybe they're not getting, or because a lot of this stuff is kind of learned as you go through your career. Right. And so trying to, prepare people as they're, getting into these deals.
Yeah, it's interesting, because one of the things that we talk about at the Real Estate Negotiation Institute is that, and this is why Tom founded the company to begin with, is that there is no negotiation training in pre-licensing. This is one of the few careers that requires a tremendous amount of negotiation prowess and expertise that doesn't provide any to new agents. And many firms are afraid to offer this sort of course content because they're not experts in negotiation. So it's one of these niche skills that people just don't really get. And so, so I think that because it's something that we do so frequently and it's so important with what we do in our business and being able to really provide the highest level of service to each and every client, I think that there is no better training. You could talk about marketing, you talk about doing comps and market analysis, you can talk about all of that stuff, but the idea of understanding clients, that psychology that goes behind how people make decisions, what are persuasion principles? How are people persuaded and how do we persuade people? And how do we identify different buyer types, different buyer behavioral cues and personalities and understand them so that we know how to persuade them or how to communicate with them that meets their needs. And that is such an important thing for what we do as human beings, but certainly what we do as real estate professionals. I think that every single agent, if they could, right out of pre-licensing, should find and focus on ways to improve their negotiability or their negotiation expertise.
Right. So kind of diving into this, I have to imagine a lot of understanding, you know, how you're going to, you know, kind of fine tuning your negotiation really depends on that buyer or client you're working with. So how do you even kind of start picking up on their cues on what's going to, you know, work for them?
Yeah. One of the things that I think that agents confuse sometimes is this idea of the elevator pitch versus a real value proposition. And it's the, okay, I can go into any situation and in 30 seconds, 60 seconds, give my elevator pitch. Why would you purchase my product or service, right? But when you truly understand value proposition, then you're actually taking that value, you're taking that elevator pitch and you're tailoring it to that specific buyer, seller, landlord, renter, whoever is purchasing. You want to understand what value means to them. So, and when we talk about value proposition, it's the same as synonymous with a cost benefit analysis, right? You have benefits over cost or over price. So how do you, when you have a fee that you charge, or that there's a listing agreement that you charge X percent, or if you're a buyer's agent working with a buyer and maybe you're not charging them anything, the seller's paying the fee, or maybe they are paying you something. But in either case, they're going to determine value based on the benefits you offer in relation to the cost or the price. And so how do we communicate the benefits that we offer to that specific client in a way that communicates utility to them, something that they can use, right? Why should they hire you as a listing agent? What is it that you can offer them? What benefits can you offer them that justify or over-justify the price that you charge? And when you're generic about that and you're like, well, I'm professional and I'm punctual and I have a great marketing department, you know, the things that basically maybe every other agent says, you are going to, the value proposition may be confusing, as opposed to if you understand that client is going through a divorce and one of the important things to them is subtlety, is the idea that they don't want this all to be out in the open to all of their friends and relatives. They want this to be somewhat confidential. How can you convey how you are going to do your job and honor that confidentiality? That connection to that buyer or to that seller may be the thing that all of a sudden they say, okay, the benefits are growing. I'll pay whatever it costs for this agent because they are going to be the person that's going to satisfy my needs and what is valuable to me. So I think when the first thing that we need to do is listen to our client and understand what it is that they want ask a lot of questions and then close our mouth. Ask open-ended questions that allow them to just speak and speak and speak. And a lot of times we get in our own trap where we ask closed-ended questions, yes or no answers, because we don't want to be intrusive or we don't want to bother that person that's buyer or seller that we're speaking to. We want to make it as bland as we can, but bland does not get us the information that we need. And the information that we need is going to help us better serve that client. So if we can be ceaselessly curious, as I call it, and ask question after question, open-ended question, let our clients speak and let them tell us what's important to them and why, then we're going to be able to start tailoring that value proposition to explain to them why we are the best person to help them achieve their goals.
Right. Yeah. And I was going to ask about, the types of questions you ask it, because those open-ended questions, I mean, that's really where you're getting all that information. In that conversation, the least amount that you can talk, the better.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And I love to read, especially read books on negotiation and influence and strategy and those types of things. And of course, one that probably many of your listeners have heard of or read is Chris Voss's book, Never Split the Difference. And one of the things that Chris Voss talks about is asking what and how questions as opposed to why questions, right? It's how should I understand that? What about that is troublesome to you? Things like that, using what questions and how questions open up the door. They're oftentimes thought of as less intrusive than why questions are, but they also allow for the person to speak freely because they're not closing them off. How and what questions will open up that dialogue? And that's it. There's no magic question, but usually, as you pointed out, the magic in your question is one that allows for the greatest intel, the greatest amount of information to come back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, not only are you gaining that information, but you're also, you're kind of lightening them up to where they start to build a rapport with you also. This is somebody that they're actually able to have a conversation and share, some of these thoughts with.
Yeah. And that's that building trust. We always talk about especially in that initial conversation with any buyer, seller, landlord, renter, you want to build trust and rapport. You want to educate and then you want to qualify, right? You want to understand what strengths and weaknesses they're bringing to the table and qualify that client. But you also want to build that trust and rapport and educate that client. And those two go hand in hand. So yeah, if you can come into a situation and identify the kind of decision maker you're working with, are they assertive? Are they a humanist? Are they collaborative? What type of person are you working with? And then tailor your conversation. It's kind of that idea of mirroring, understanding, picking up on the cues that the other person is providing and letting them guide the way that you have that conversation. They're going to start to trust you. They're going to feel that what we call that sameness connection, or the principle of liking for persuasion, for all of the persuasion nerds out there. The principle of liking is that idea that when you have a connection with someone, it's that primal brain that, what comes from our ancestors, 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 with that fight or flight idea. And when we see something that we recognize, or we hear something we recognize, or we feel something that we recognize, then that creates a connection, that creates that liking connection, that sameness connection. And trust is built in an instant. Yeah.
Right. I like what you're talking about, the collaborative negotiation and really kind of connecting with your client that way. I feel like that has got to be a great way to not only help get through, the transaction that is happening now, but it also builds for those, referrals and things down the line, because you kept that client in the loop and involved through the entire process.
100%. And that's so true. Like that, the life cycle of a client, once you get through that deal, once that deal is over, that life cycle just continues on with testimonials and referrals and repeat clients, right? And the more that they trust you, the more they're going to refer you. But then it also has residual benefits on how much you make, how much you charge, because now you're no longer defending your commission every time that you sit down at a table. You are worth every penny that you charge, and there are less objections when it comes to whether you're worth X percent or Y percent, right? And so, yeah, it really, really does continue on through that first life cycle of the first transaction and into all of your subsequent dealings and all of your subsequent work.
Right. Kind of shifting gears a little bit to the, trying to bring on new clients and, get them to work with you, kind of from, you've got the client you're working with, maybe it's a buyer and you're trying to, just even explain, what the market is like and kind of get them prepared for how things are changing, especially the last, couple years ago. I know Here it was wild. I mean, the houses next door to us, they weren't even being listed yet and they were selling. Right. It was just insane. How do you talk to your, like a buyer client, say, hey, look, this is gonna be a long process, and keep their, faith and trust in you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I use this term resilient buyer. And I think that you will find that if your buyer's not successful on the first highest and best or the first bid or whatever, it's a longer journey, or maybe what's on the market is not suiting their needs. And so they're waiting out the market to see if something better comes along. And then, as you pointed out, what we've gone through in the last, 6 to 9 months is, okay, they've waited out the market, but as they've waited out the market, interest rates have gone up and now their buying power goes down. So it can be a very difficult, it can be difficult to have those conversations with a client. But as probably many of your listeners already know, the first thing is you have to be honest with them. This idea that you sugarcoat everything or that you make it seem different than what they know it is not going to help you build trust. Stephen M. R. Covey talks about the two dimensions of trust: character and competence. So your character is what is your motive? What is your agenda? Your courage, your integrity, all of those aspects of who you are as a person. And you've got to bring all of that to each part of the conversation, because that's going to help you in that first dimension of trust, especially if you're someone who doesn't have a lot of experience to rely on. So you've got to bring your integrity. And if you're constantly telling someone what they want to hear or just not being truthful or speaking off the cuff without any information, you're going to lose that client's trust. So first is just have frank and honest conversations with them. Set expectations. That idea of setting up what the process looks like. In any negotiation, you want to start with process. What is this process going to look like? I want everybody to be on the same page in terms of expectations, and starting with something with your buyer of, there is not one right apartment. There is many right apartments. There are many right apartments. So I want to have that conversation with you up front, because look, we're in a market where you're going to, in certain circumstances, have power as a buyer where you didn't have power a year ago. You might be able to have a discount where a year ago there were 20 buyers lining up to buy that apartment or house. That's a good thing for you. But we're still dealing with inventory issues. We're still dealing with sellers who have the mentality that low supply means they should get the highest possible price. And so they are reluctant to or unwilling to sell for less than X amount of dollars. Or they understand that if they leave their house, they are going to be trading up from a 3% interest rate to a 7% or 6% interest rate. And they feel like they've lost buying power. So they're trying to get as much as they can on the sale end. So there are going to be circumstances where we have more power than in others. But what I want you to understand, client, is that as we go through this journey, we're not going to win every bid. We are not going to participate in every best and highest. We are going to move on from some houses and we're going to bid on others. But I'm going to be here with you through that entire journey. And when we decide what our top price is in a bidding scenario where there are multiple bidders, we will make that decision using data, using logic, and we will have conversations so that you know what your indifference point is, right? You know what your walkaway point is. So if we decide to make an offer of $865,000 That's the best we're willing to do, price and terms included. And they sell it for more than that. We will have the comfort to say we put our best foot forward. It wasn't meant to be our house. Somebody else was willing to pay more than we were willing to pay for that house. And we will walk away knowing that we didn't move the goalpost. We didn't overpay. We didn't chase the dream. We were measured in how we approached this. And we walked away because this is what we were willing to pay. And then all of a sudden you're empowering that buyer as opposed to them feeling like they're just getting tossed around left and right. So, and then I mentioned the character piece. I should mention the competence piece. Obviously that's your experience. That's that the results that you've had. And when you can sit down with a buyer or a seller and have conversations with them about if then, and what if this happens and talk from experience, that just, I mean, that, then the client understands that they can trust that if you get into a sticky situation or if you get into a difficult position, that you've been there and you know how to address that situation. And that builds a lot of trust as well.
Right. Absolutely. And it shows that you really do have their best interest at heart, where you don't want to get them into a situation where they're overpaying and, you know, it's really, you know, going to kind of hurt them in the long run.
Yeah. Exactly. And you know, we have buyers where we've had the conversation with them that we say, look, would you regret losing the apartment over $1,000, $2,000, $3,000? And that's playing into that fear of loss, which is a very effective use of persuasion, that fear of loss. But there's also another way to do it. And that is when we look at what we're willing to bid, price and terms, let's find a plan B. Let's find a backup plan, a BATNA, as Harvard calls it, so that we can compare what we're doing, what our goals are with this property, to something else that is second best. Because once you have that, now instead of saying, would you regret losing the apartment or the house over $2,000, $5,000, $10,000, now you're saying, is it worth going up to X amount of dollars for this house, rather than turning to our plan B and going after plan B? And the stronger your plan B is, the stronger you're negotiating from a position of strength. Because now that 865 number becomes very clear to your client. At 866, plan B looks a lot more attractive than plan A. So we'll go to 865, but we're going to turn and make plan B plan A if we have to go any higher. And that helps you as an agent as well, because now you're not just in an empty void if they don't win that highest and best. You've actually got a second option that maybe needs a little more renovation, or maybe it's a little bit more expensive, but on a better block or a cornered lot or whatever it is. And they can make the comparison between two actual, they can use the contrast principle. And again, for the persuasion principle geeks, they can look at those two things in contrast to each other and determine when plan A ceases to be plan A and plan B starts looking better than plan A. And putting it in real context is huge for our client.
Right. Absolutely. Shifting gears over to the seller side of things, and you're representing, you know, the seller, again, crazy markets, people being able, you know, sell as is, no inspections, all kinds of different things. Mm-hmm. Now it's not quite the case, but you might still have, you know, like you might have these buyers or these sellers that are like, hey, well, not too long ago, my friend was able to do this. And so Now you really kind of need to start communicating those changes that, look, we're not going to get the 45, you know, buyers willing to come way up in price and throw everything out the window. How do you communicate that to prepare them?
Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, when you listen to a lot of podcasts or webinars, or if you do a lot of reading or listening on how the market is changing, you'll hear people say something like the party's over. And you know, people use that term. And I don't think that they understand how demoralizing the party is over can be to somebody at a party and to a seller who missed their opportunity to sell at the top of the peak of the market. Right. So this goes back to communication and that idea that the party is over. You've got to find a way to communicate that, to convey that in a way that empowers that seller, that where you can say to them, look, thankfully, we are still in a market that that you're going to do very well in this market. We're probably going to have many buyers who view it, but by the way that buyers have buyers' motivation has changed. So we may see buyers come through. We may see 20 or 30 buyers come through, and where in another market, those 20 or 30 buyers would all be putting down offers because they have FOMO or because they really think that they have to get involved in the game immediately. That has shifted a little bit. So buyers are a little bit more careful about moving forward with a specific house or apartment in this market. They're constantly watching interest rates, and they may decide not to put in an offer this week because they just lost an eighth of a point on a 6% interest rate. And then next week they'll be willing to put in an offer because they gain a quarter of a point. So buyers are really watching the market more closely, and buyers are looking a lot more before they leap in this market. So we should be prepared that it may take us, unless we are willing to price aggressively, it will likely take us longer to sell the home. So this is where you get into that if then again, right? So it's like, I want to provide you, seller, with options. Here are our options. We can price aggressively, meaning we can be very conscious of where the market is and attract as many buyers as possible because our competition is going to be overshooting us, and we're going to look very attractive to our in comparison to our competition. Or we can be aspirational with our pricing and price on the high end of the spectrum of where I would recommend us pricing the apartment. So I'm already creating a zone of possible agreement. I'm not going to say whatever you want to list, wherever you want to list, I'm going to say, I'll create a zone where I think we are aspirational and where I think we're really hitting the basement and really, you know, creating a fire sale. And in that range somewhere is where we should price the apartment. And you are ultimately going to make this decision, seller. It's not my decision. It's your decision. But what I will do is I'll provide you kind of an if then. If we choose this road, these are some of the likely scenarios coming out of that. If we choose this road, these are some of the likely scenarios. And then they can make an educated decision as to whether they are comfortable being on the market a little bit longer, or they're comfortable putting, like maybe you come into an agreement, you say, let's price it aspirationally because there's nothing on the market in your neighborhood right now. So we'll price it on the high end, but within 1 week, if we don't have an offer, or if within 2 weeks we don't have X amount of showings, that we pivot quickly and we move toward the market price. So you can, by giving them options, you can come up with a strategy and a game plan that satisfies your needs to help them and their needs to sell their house. And I think right. That's where it really comes into play, is when we're both taking stands, when they're saying, yes, I will, and you're saying, no, you won't, you don't get anywhere. But if you understand what their area of concern is and you actually listen to them, provide them options, now they have things to choose from, and they see that you're trying to help them find a solution, as opposed to you have some ulterior motive and you're just trying to sell quickly or maximize the amount of money in your pocket, whatever those misconceptions that seller might have about you and your intentions or your motives.
Right. Absolutely. And I think a lot of that comes down to, you know, that initial conversation of finding what their motivation for selling is. What's the reason why they're, you know, leaving that property?
Yeah. And that's huge, right? It's incredibly important. I mean, we constantly focus on the fact that for all of our sellers, especially in this market where we feel like we're going to have a seller who may not understand that the quote unquote party's over, and we enter into that conversation with this guard up already, that I'm going to have to defend my commission and I'm going to have to try to convince this seller to price their house or apartment within or where the market says it should be priced. And we go in thinking, I'm going to have to convince this person, without understanding what it is that they actually want, what's important to them. What's most important to them? Is it price, or is it moving quickly? Is it closing the door on this chapter of their life? What is it that motivates them? And then coming up with a plan that satisfies their goals. And this goes back to that value proposition piece, right? If you're tailoring your value proposition to the needs and values of the person that you are working with or that you're speaking to, you're going to create a far better, far higher value proposition than you would if you just went in with your stock answers and your assumptions.
Right. Absolutely. Well, this is obviously a conversation that we could have for hours. I mean, there's so much that you could really jam into a conversation about negotiation and so many different, you know, tentacles that you can go down. But for people that are more interested in hearing more about it, taking your courses, tell me where they can find that and get more of this information.
Thank you for that. So my negotiation courses, Certified Negotiation Expert and Master Certified Negotiation Expert courses, I do teach them online. I'm based in New York, but my courses online that are based in New York are hosted by the Real Estate Board of New York. So you can always go to therenni.com, therenni.com. And you can find all of our classes. There are various instructors teaching throughout the United States and in Canada as well. So if you're listening from outside of the East Coast, you can take my course, but you can also take something that's perhaps in person or more local to you. We have phenomenal instructors. So therenni.com is a great resource. I teach, like I said, my courses are through REBNY. This is the Real Estate Board of New York. So REBNY.com. And you'll see the links to my courses. I have one coming up in June. I don't know when this is going to air, but I do have a course coming up. My next course through REBNY is June 13th through the 15th, I believe. These are 12-hour courses. So they're over 3 days and they're 4 days of instruction each day. So they're very robust courses. This isn't a 1 hour, 2 hour CE course where you just get the broad brushstrokes. We dive deep. We do exercises and a role play and case studies. So it's an awesome class. So that's that. I do video content through YouTube and Instagram. My handle is Eric the Expert. So you can go to Instagram and check out some of my videos. I do a lot of content on negotiation on both YouTube and Instagram. And then my company, Archway Partners, is my coaching company. And the website is archwaypartnersinc.com. And I'm actually going to have what I call the decision makers class. It's about talking about who are the people that make decisions in a purchase scenario, and how do we understand them with behavioral cues and personality types. So that's going to be a 4-hour course, 1 hour a week. And those dates are TBD, but you can find that on my website, archwaypartnersinc.com. That'll be online as well. That's going to be a web course as well.
Awesome. Yeah, I really think this is all this stuff is so great, because like you said, it's one of those things, it's not taught, you know, when you get your license, it's one of those things, it's like it's assumed you're going to figure it out as you go. Right. But if you can have some of the tools in the toolbox before you head out, it definitely makes things a lot easier.
100%. And you know, to that point, if you're somebody who's been in the business for 2 or 3 decades, one of the things that I have people in New York who take my class who run circles around me in terms of productivity. They're doing hundreds of millions of dollars of deals a year. And one of the takeaways that they get from the course is, I never knew how to actually convey what I was doing and the strategy I was implementing to my clients. I was never able to really walk them down the road of what I was doing and why, or offer them choices and explain to them what I was doing while I was offering them choices. All the language of negotiation is so important, and it's something we just don't get as real estate professionals.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. And I look forward to speaking with you again.
I really want to thank Eric for taking the time to share his tips for effective negotiating with us today. There's so much more we could have gone into. So remember, I've included several links in the episode description for you to hear more. So once again, if you think you or someone else on your team has an incredible story or tip to share with our community, send us a message at feedback@smartagents.com. Well, that wraps things up for this episode, but remember, follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts and make sure to subscribe to the Smart Agents YouTube channel. Again, I'm Michael Walter, and we'll see you on the next episode.